When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And welcome in, everybody, to another edition of Future Brew on MazerBrew.com. My name is Vaughn Lozon, and we are back. It's been a couple weeks since we last recorded, and lo and behold, all of Michigan recruiting, just all hell broke loose pretty much over the last couple weeks. Had some commitments for the good guys, had some players go the other way. So we're going to kind of talk about all of that today. We've got John Simmons and Seth Barry on the line as well for this podcast. John, how you doing, man? It's been a wild couple weeks on the recruiting trail.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad to be back to discuss it all. It's kind of one step forward, two steps back on the recruiting trail. It feels like good and bad things keep happening.
Yeah, it's been something, dude. Like, you know, we had some good news and then some bad news and then some good news again and then some bad news again. So that it's been a roller coaster the last few weeks, truly. Seth, how are you doing, my friend? How has your last couple weeks been?
I've been doing pretty good, just, you know, keeping up and following on all the recruiting news that we've had. And, you know, at least the roller coaster is better than no ride at all. I mean, this is what it felt like for a couple months there. So at least there's some intrigue and things to talk about as things kind of progress, you know, whether they're up or down or good or bad. At least we're on the ride now instead of it stalling like it had for a little while. So that's a good thing, I think.
I was at Cedar Point one time about to ride the Gemini, and we had to stop on that first ascent up because someone brought their purse on the ride. So we were stuck there for like 20 minutes. That's pretty much what football recruiting has been for the last, like, several months. It was very, very slow, no commitments. And now, boom, everything's happening all at once. So we're going to talk all about all of this, what's happened over the last couple of weeks. Let's just start with the bad, like the really, really bad. And I hate to like start the podcast on this note, but it will get progressively better. I do promise. So since kind of what I alluded to, been a hot minute since we last recorded. And many good things have happened. This one's not. Five-star in-state 2023 quarterback Dante Moore announced last Friday his commitment to Oregon. So he is firmly locked in with the Ducks at this point. And it's been widely known that he's been Michigan's number one overall target, regardless of position, in this 23 class. He was the only quarterback Michigan had offered throughout the entire recruiting cycle. Jim Harbaugh personally offered him when he was a seventh or eighth grader, somewhere in middle school. But for some reason, felt the need to kind of take a back seat in this recruitment and let Matt Weiss and Sharone Moore and some of the other assistant coaches take the reins in this recruitment, try and reel them in themselves. So this entire thing, this whole strategy here, it failed with Dante Moore. It was something that didn't necessarily fail with some of these other recruitments, like Donovan Edwards and Will Johnson, kind of the guys that they like went fully all in with. Jim Harbaugh kind of took over these recruitments and got those guys to commit to Michigan. This time he took a step back and ended up not being good news for the Maize and Blue. So, John, I'll pass it to you. In your opinion, how big of a loss do you think this is for the Michigan 2023 class? Because in my opinion, I think this is single-handedly the biggest loss in the Harbaugh era at Michigan as far as the recruiting trail goes. I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a huge loss. Just considering how concerted of an effort they made on Moore, you know, being the only guy they really recruited up until this point, which really puts them back when they're trying to find a replacement for him since so many top quarterbacks have already committed. But yeah, it just makes you wonder about Michigan's strategy here because, you know, like you said, Harbaugh personally offered him when he was a seventh grader. He's the only QB that Michigan recruited this cycle, but Harbaugh never got involved. So you kind of wonder why, because he has done it before, the recruitments you've mentioned, and it's worked. And you see him doing it now with like Jaden Davis in the 24 class, who I'm sure we'll talk about soon. You know, you already see him getting more involved there than he did with Moore. So you kind of wonder why, you know, did he not think as highly of him as the rest of the staff did? Or, you know, was there something else, like distracted with the NFL stuff and the Vikings, or who knows? But it just kind of seemed kind of disjointed with him and the rest of the staff for like why they were going all in, but there's still a little bit held back on Michigan's side. So just, you know, it'll always make you wonder, you know, what would happen if he did get more involved and kind of took over the recruitment, if they could have eventually pulled it out. Like, you know, Moore said he was close to committing to Michigan towards the end, which, you know, is kind of surprising to hear given that Michigan fans never really thought he was kind of ready to wrap it up for Michigan at any point during his recruitment.
Yeah, I was certainly surprised to hear that and see that quote on Twitter. I think I know which one you're referring to. I don't know, man. I'm not sure how truthful that really is. I don't know the kid. I don't know anything about, like, you know, the inside baseball of this recruitment. But to me, I feel like Michigan was always kind of on the back burner and like the fallback plan. I don't know how truthful that statement really is. Perhaps he was incredibly close to committing to Michigan, but I digress. Seth, I want to have your thoughts about this as well. I'm really curious to hear what you have to say about this whole recruitment and just the strategy that Jim Harbaugh ended up going with that ultimately ended up failing. And yeah, just curious to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah. I saw that same quote that you guys did and was a little bit surprised by, you know, Michigan being him saying Michigan is close, but I kind of agree with you on that, Vaughn. I think it was kind of him more or less throwing them a bone, you know, saying, hey, you know, you guys have been recruiting me for a long time. And, you know, this is, you know, appreciate all that. And I can just, you know, I'll just say it's close, but like I said, I don't know for sure, but I thought it was kind of along those lines. As far as the strategy that Michigan implemented here, obviously, you know, the first thing, you know, like we've talked about, it is it's a massive failure on the part of Michigan regarding Moore in this class. And obviously, you know, like John was saying, you look down, you know, the 247 list of, you know, even the top 50 quarterbacks, you get the 3-star range and a lot of those, you know, almost all of them are committed to a school. So there's seemingly nowhere to go in this class. Obviously, you know, we can talk about the 2024 class and how that might play out, but yeah, they kind of got themselves stuck in terms of, you know, we're going to go after Moore and we're going to go after just him. Like I said, it is puzzling about, you know, whether, you know, why Harbaugh wasn't more involved in this, like you guys said, and he has been in the past when they've been able to land some bigger targets. So yeah, it's all around disappointing as far as the recruitment goes for him. And I think you can blame, you know, the strategy, you can talk about NIL and what Oregon may have offered him there. I mean, I know we don't know all the details of that either, but I mean, you think of a school like Oregon, it's especially with the recent news of USC and UCLA coming to the Big Ten, it's like Oregon doesn't even know where they're going to play football in 2 years or what the Pac-12 might look like. So whether they come to the Big Ten or what happens, but just to lose out to a school in that situation, I think is also frustrating for Michigan fans.
Yeah, just frustrating all around. And I know that they've got a lot of NIL money from, you know, Nike and all those other collectives and things along those lines. But yeah, it's certainly frustrating when you bring up a good point about Oregon not really knowing where they're going to be playing football or any athletics in the next few years. Could it be the Pac-12? Could they join the Big Ten? None of that is a fact at this point. We don't really know where they're going to end up going. So, I mean, perhaps he ends up playing in the Big Ten after all, but that remains to be seen. Let's talk about QB recruiting moving forward. And I wanted to throw this your way, John, first, because at this point, I mean, we've talked about, what Jim Harbaugh wanted to do at the quarterback position in 23. It was Dante Moore or bust, and they busted. So now, in your opinion, what would you do, John? If you're Jim Harbaugh with QB recruiting, would you just look towards the 24 class and just go all in on Jaden Davis and kind of do the strategy that you had done with all those other high ranked kids in the past, like the Will Johnsons of the world, and really take over as the head recruiter of the recruitment and secure an elite player in the junior class? Or would you try to get a guy in the 23 class or maybe even the transfer portal? I don't know if there are any options out there at this point. I don't think there are. So if you go the transfer portal route, you'll have to wait until probably after the season or perhaps sometime in the middle of the season. If some kid hops in the portal, you might have an idea of who's going to be available. So you are now Jim Harbaugh, John. What do you do?
I guess you look at all three options, to be honest. I don't think they have to go to the portal until after this season anyway, since that's when Dante Moore would be on campus. So I think that's a possibility. But for now, you definitely want to push for a guy in the 24 class like Jaden Davis that can become the leader. Like you said, I think that really helps. You know, you look back at the J.J. McCarthy's and Will Johnson, recruits like that who kind of become the leader and recruit their peers. Michigan's kind of missing that in their class so far this cycle. So it's been kind of tough. You know, they don't have a lot of high ranked guys that other high ranked guys want to play with. So you really want that guy in place. And if they can get Jaden Davis to commit, if he comes up for the barbecue, that would be huge. The reports that he wants to shut it down after his junior season, but I think they'll really push him and pitch him on being the leader of the class. So we'll see if that works. You also don't want to skip quarterback for a cycle. You know, they took two last year, which is good. You know, they're not the highest ranked players, but it does give you some guys in the room that have been learning the system and, you know, they could hit it as well and be a good addition. But, you know, you also want to keep an eye on someone like Brady Drogosh, who's committed to Cincinnati right now, or if someone just kind of blows up over a senior year, kind of like how CJ Stroud did when Michigan and Ohio State really battled for him after he had a really good senior season and ended up going, moving like all the way up to third QB in the nation. You know, it doesn't even have to be a guy that goes that high, just, you know, another good solid guy that you can get in the room and give yourself another lottery ticket.
Yeah, I think you got to go after a quarterback in this 23 class no matter what. I don't care who it is. You need somebody. You can't pass on quarterback in one class. Even though they took two in the most recent recruiting cycle, you never know, because a guy like Alex Orgie could end up on the defensive side of the ball and play linebacker, or perhaps he's a gadget type A.J. Henning player and is a running back wide receiver hybrid. You just don't know until all of this plays out. So I think you got to take a QB at some point while also going all in on Jaden Davis, a terrific talent, among the best quarterbacks in this class. in the 24 class. He's a really, really good prospect. And it, like you said, John, it's so important to get a leader in your recruiting class so early, like JJ McCarthy and Will Johnson, the two guys that you mentioned. Those were ambassadors for their recruiting classes. And like you said, Michigan doesn't have one in 23. Cole Cabana is the highest ranked kid in this class. And honestly, he could be one of the more quiet guys in this class. I really don't see a whole lot on social media or otherwise from Cole Cabana. It's just interesting how this all kind of plays out now. Zeph, I want to throw it your way as well. Do you agree with our takes, or do you think that they could perhaps skip out on QB in the 23 class if the right guy isn't available?
Yeah, no, I do think it's a good idea to go after a quarterback in the class. Like you said, even if they're not the highest prospect, I mean, just to have someone there, I think is a good, you know, a good strategy. As far as the 24 class, like I said, yeah, I agree, you know, go all after Jaden Davis. I think as far as the strategy goes, you know, in the 24 class, first of all, you have Dylan Raiola to Ohio State, who's the number one quarterback. So you have two of your rivals, you know, even though they haven't, you know, haven't played Notre Dame, but you have Notre Dame, who took CJ Carr out of your backyard. You have Ohio State with Raiola, a couple top quarterbacks there. So Michigan, the pressure is even building even more, I feel, you know, considering what's happened kind of around them. So, you know, like I said, if Davis gets that barbecue, that's going to be big. And I know they've had momentum on him early, you know, where that goes from here, we'll kind of see. But yeah, just everything building around. And as far as the strategy goes with Jim Harbaugh, like maybe you take the lead, like we've talked about, like especially with him being, you know, so-called a quarterback whisperer. I know a lot of these recruits, I mean, they've had, you know, their parents, or if you talk to, you know, like my dad, he'll, for example, oh yeah, I love Jim Harbaugh when he played or whatever. Like I feel like he still has that pull in terms of, you know, just people trusting him as a kind of a quarterback evaluator and talent developer. And, you know, if that's your thing, then take the reins on that and lead in that sense.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with what you just said about Harbaugh kind of having that name hold a little bit more weight than what you would expect out of a head coach, like just anywhere at any college program. Like he's more of a celebrity than a lot of the other, like, you, of course, Nick Saban, everybody knows Nick Saban, and Dabo Sweeney is a very well-known guy, but Jim Harbaugh, I mean, he's been on TV. He's just always on social media with even the goofy stuff, like the vacation dad stuff from like this past week or 2 weeks ago or whatever. Like people just love the content that Harbaugh provides. So yeah. And you see the recruiting interviews and the articles, all these recruits talk up Jim Harbaugh like no other. They always say, oh, he, you know, he's a goofy guy, but he's really down to earth. And you wouldn't expect that out of someone like him. And it's because he is a celebrity comparatively to other college football coaches. So, yeah, I think he should take the reins with Jaden Davis for sure. And hopefully if he does end up visiting for the barbecue, lock up that recruitment for sure. Let's go to the good news, boys, because it hasn't been all doom and gloom in Ann Arbor since our last podcast. In fact, quite the opposite. Other than Dante committing to Oregon, everything else has been relatively good. Michigan's picked up four commitments over that two-week period, and these are all pretty solid prospects worth taking in the class, in my opinion. None of them are going to be, you know, like the Will Johnsons or the JJ McCarthys of the world, you know, five stars. They're not five stars. They're not going to lead the class in terms of getting more talent. But these are all solid prospects worth taking. Let's go back to the afternoon of July 1st, when three-star 2023 wide receiver Frederick Moore committed to Michigan. He is 6 feet tall, 175 pounds, ranked number 491 overall in the composite, just 28 spots lower than Michigan's other receiver commit, Samaj Morgan. And just a few hours after that commitment, Michigan picked up another in the form of 2023 four-star linebacker, Samaj Bridgman. And he is 6'2", 230 from Philly, number 306 overall on the composite. And this commitment, in my opinion, was a little bit more welcoming than the Frederick Moore one. Not saying that his wasn't, but Samaj Bridgman really filled a need considering Michigan lost out on Raylan Wilson, the a former commit in the top 100 overall, four-star linebacker. And then he, if anybody cares about this, he committed to Georgia over the weekend. So there's that knowledge for you. John, I'll pass it to you with these two guys. Very welcome commits, in my opinion. They should be able to find their way onto the field probably a year or so into their college career. I don't think they're going to pop right out of the gate, like you would expect out of a Darius Clemens this season or a Donovan Edwards last season. But I want to ask you, what do you like about these two players? Because I think they're all, both of these guys, pretty solid with what they do. Frederick Moore, I think, is a crafty route runner. He's not going to burn you with the speed, but a very skilled receiver. And Samaj Bridgman, in my opinion, can kind of do a little bit of everything. He's a very versatile linebacker. He's big at 6'2", 230. And you certainly like to see that out of a defensive prospect at his position. So what do you like about these two guys?
Oops, sorry, wasn't unmuted. Yeah, I'm especially excited for Bridgman, considering that Michigan really turned up the heat once they saw him in person and got his legit measurements. You know, they saw that he was actually, 6'2", 6'3", which is really encouraging. And I think gave them the go-ahead to really push for him and eventually land him. So I think they really think they have something with him. And it's kind of, he's very toolsy. Has a long frame and stuff, and they know that they have a few years to work with him with the young linebacker core that they have right now. They'll have a few seasons of Junior Colson, Nakai Hill Green, and those guys before they have to rely on Bridgman. So I think you'll have some good seasoning before he sees the field, and that should also be the case with Frederick Moore, given how loaded Michigan's wide receiver room is right now and the good class they had last cycle at receiver. It'll give him some more time. I do think people are down on him more than they should be because of his reported, over 11 second 100 meter time. But, that was when he was a sophomore. He'll have a few more years to improve that time. And watching his film, doing his scouting report, he does look a lot quicker on the field. He's regularly pulling away from guys and plays a pretty good competition in Missouri. So I think these are both solid guys that you'll see pop up a few years down the road.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree with the what you just said about Moore with people kind of hating on him because of the reported 40 or not 40 time, 100 meter dash time that, it was from like 2 years ago. I mean, the kid has probably improved that time over the last 2 years. I can't imagine that he hasn't. That would be very interesting for Michigan to take a guy who hasn't improved in that fast of the game, because it is important from a wide receiver perspective to be able to have the wheels to get past cornerbacks and be able to create that separation. But I don't think the reported time from 2 years ago is accurate today. So I completely agree with that. Seth, I wanted to get your thoughts on that as well about these two prospects. What do you think about these two guys?
Yeah, I think these are two guys that we had talked about a few weeks ago on the podcast before, about a week before they committed. So just to kind of reiterate some of those points. Yeah, I agree about Frederick Moore. I think we're all kind of on the same page about him. The fact that, he's not the most, athletically, he's not going to blow you away, but I think he can do a lot of good things in terms of his route running and just, it's really going to help him. Like we talked about, it's a really deep wide receiver room to learn from and a really talented one. So, he's going to have that under his belt when he's, when he's able to get on campus and even as he just watches, watches from afar this season, it'll be, that's going to play into his favor, I think. But he has a lot of good tools that I think he'll be able to utilize in Michigan's offense once he gets on campus and gets a couple years into his college career. And Bridgman, the same thing. I think he's you know, reading various articles on him when he was being recruited. I know, you know, Alabama was really high on just his versatility and his athleticism. And in a lot of the schools that, you know, the different articles you read, a lot of the coaches had from various schools had high praise of him, just in terms of the multiple positions he can play. You know, you can blitz him off the edge as a, you know, and he can get to the quarterback, you know, sideline to sideline type of guy. And like John mentioned there too, with the young linebacking core, with guys like, you know, Hill Green and Junior Colson, that, you know, he's going to have time to develop and progress. So they were very comfortable in going after him and being able to land him. And same type of thing. I think by the time he's a couple of years into his college career, that he's going to see a level of success to in a lot of, you know, brings a lot of traits to Michigan's defense.
Yeah, I think just give him a year or so and these guys will be ready to play. I really believe that. And, you know, two solid prospects. And, you know, these next two guys that we're going to talk about, also really solid prospects, perhaps even better than those two guys, which is kind of interesting here, that committed after. So let's talk about these two guys. Last Friday, Michigan received, in my opinion, a very hard fought commitment from 2023 four-star edge prospect Collins Achiampong. And I say hard fought because he was originally supposed to commit on that same day that Bridgman and Moore did on July 1st. He had a moment of pause because of Miami's NIL pitch to him. He was reportedly going to make hundreds of thousands of dollars. I don't know if that's completely true or not. That was the report I saw. So he moved back his commitment date a whole week, and somehow Mike Elston was still able to get the job done and secure this commitment, which is just brilliant. He's 6'7", 255 pounds, Collins Achiampong is. He's going to be playing high school football this season in the Trinity League in California, which is one of the top leagues in all of high school football in the entire country. He's going to be playing for Santa Margarita, and we'll get to play against schools like Mater Dei, St. John Bosco. I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, these are top high schools, not only in California, but the entire country. Really interesting backstory is that he's a native of Ghana, hasn't had a whole lot of football experience, but in my opinion, that is perfectly okay. Because Michigan has turned some players like that into superstars, like David Ojabo and Quiddy Pay being the two most recent ones. So, John, I want to pass it to you about Achiampong because he has a ton of upside. He's going to need a year or so probably in the strength and conditioning department and learning the playbook, kind of just getting up to speed with the game of football before he really contributes to the Wolverines. But when he does, I really think this could be one of the next first-round NFL draft picks at the edge position coming out of Ann Arbor when his playing days are done.
Yeah, this is a huge commitment. You know, he is a really long 6'7", which is going to help being on the edge there. I think he has a really high ceiling. You know, he's a four-star prospect without having played football really that much in his life and not in the last 2 years. So I think it's a good thing that he's transferring and getting to a school so he can play and develop a little bit more, just get some game experience under his belt before he gets to Michigan. And, you know, I think the expert scouts are really high in him. You know, they're talking about him maybe getting to the top 100 if he shows on the field. So now I think Michigan will just have to hold on to him. You know, they did good to stave off Miami's NIL pitch to him after he officially visited there. But I think they'll have to keep fighting here and to keep him in the fold. But I think they have a really good toolsy guy there that they can do a lot with.
Yeah, he's super talented. He's got a lot of potential at the edge position. That is a guy that if they had lost out on him, that would have been a massive loss. And he's only barely within the top 300. But I think by the time it's all said and done, he's going to move up quite a bit because he's going to have great competition for his senior season. And he's really going to have the chance to shoot up the recruiting ranking. Seth, very quickly, running out of time on this call. Seth, your thoughts on Achiampong and his commitment?
I know this is a really exciting prospect. You know, like I said, it's going to be interesting to see kind of how he reacts actually being able to play football this year after a couple, after a couple of years off. But yeah, I think, you know, it was an interesting recruitment because obviously Miami was making that push late. And, it was one of those situations to where I think he's kind of thinking about at the end, like you talked about. But, you know, I mean, I think he kind of sees the trajectory of, you know, the past success that Michigan's had with players like him. And then, you know, the closer relationship with Quiddy Pay as well that played at Michigan, had to probably played a part in it. But yeah, I mean, I really like him as a player. And I, you know, we talk about guys kind of, you know, needing, obviously he hasn't played a lot of football, needs development, you know, we'll see what he can do at the D1 level. But I mean, he has all the tools, right? All the natural gifts you would want in a player at his position. So I don't think it'll take him long at all. And I think we're going to see him, you know, when he gets back on the field, dominate quickly. And I think when he gets on campus in Ann Arbor, it'll be, and I mentioned, you know, in the scouting report I wrote from him, or for him, that, you know, it's a transition with anyone when you're, when you just haven't played the sport very much, but I think he's going to catch on very quickly and be a really good player at Michigan.
I sure hope so, man. He's got that potential. He's got the length and the skills. He just needs to put it all together, and who knows what could happen with that. So very quickly though, let's talk about the final commitment here over the last 2 weeks. And that is from in-state four-star offensive lineman, Amir Herring, is from West Bloomfield. And this recruitment was a total roller coaster, kind of going back to that analogy from earlier in the episode, because he got offered back in July of 2020, had crystal balls roll in for Michigan pretty much immediately after, did not end the process early like some had expected him to. Michigan kind of cooled on him a bit, which led Nebraska to aggressively recruit him, almost get a commitment from him. But Michigan, luckily, was able to sway him back after getting him to officially visit Ann Arbor for Victor's weekend, lay out a solid plan for him as far as the on-field success will go. And he projects to the interior, so he's going to play either guard or center. I think he's more likely bound for center, but we'll certainly see what happens. Things could happen, so we'll see. John, I just want to throw it to you very quickly. I'm just so happy this recruitment is over because it's been going on for so long and there's been so many twists and turns. So with Herring having as high as a floor as any prospect Michigan's been recruiting this cycle, in my opinion, what are your thoughts on him and where he projects to at the next level here with his college career in Ann Arbor?
Yeah, I'm glad that Michigan ended up getting him in the class. I think he could play either guard or center. Just good to have these solid four stars from a pipeline program. Especially with a lot of Michigan's offensive line targets going elsewhere. So it's good that the bridges weren't too burned and that he ended up in the class.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think with the pipeline, with the relationships, it was just a win-win, very solid prospect. I think he has a massive floor. I think he's going to be a really solid college player. Seth, what are your thoughts on this finally coming to an end here?
Yeah, just really quickly, it was good that Michigan was able to land him. Like I said, it got a little interesting toward the end where, you know, Michigan kind of cooled on him for a little while, ended up coming back, and, you know, they rekindled, that relationship to an extent with Sherrone Moore and the rest of the coaching staff. So I think one thing about Herring, I'll just make a quick point about just his game is, you know, outside of his physical attributes, he just plays with a relentless effort. And if there's one thing that, you know, you notice from Michigan's offensive line last year is just that they had that, you know, level of nastiness that you like to see from an offensive line. And I think he comes in and he fits just from a culture perspective that, you know, what Michigan wants to bring to the table in terms of just being able to pound the ball and really, lean on their run game and trust those five guys up front. So I think from a culture standpoint and just a pure effort standpoint that he's a good fit there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, overall, high character kid, high academic kid, high floor at the offensive guard or center position. I think he can excel at either one, truly. So this is a great pickup. Should have happened much, much sooner, but a commitment is a commitment, and we will take them no matter when it happens in the cycle. Guys, that's all the time we got for today. Thanks a lot for tuning in to Future Brew. You can follow me on Twitter at Vaughn_Lozon. John, where are you at, buddy?
At Simmons_John.
And Seth, what is your Twitter handle?
At Barry_Seth14.
Follow Amazing Brew on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that good stuff. 5-star reviews on all of our podcasts. We'd certainly appreciate that as well. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week with more Michigan football recruiting.